Okay, my name is Ron, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm going to share for, I better keep an eye on my watch, so I get high on my own voice sometimes. Anyway, I came to this program, and I got sober in June the 1st of 1977. And I've been sober ever since, you know. And it's been a, you know, it's been a good way to go for me, because I'm having some physical problems right now, but you know, I wouldn't trade my sobriety for any of it. You know, the physical problems, it comes and goes, but the program doesn't. You know, it's either, I look at it, you know, either this way. You either do this way, God's way, or you do it this way. I've already been on this side, and I've almost pegged out on this side. I almost pegged my time out on there. So anyway, I went to my first meeting in 1963, and it was in Upland, and it was a job for me. I was in my early 20s, and I used to take these winos that lived in a place called Rose Gardens. And the guy that started this place, was his name was Rose, and he put this place up, and people would, you know, he'd get residents to stay there, and that went on for a while. I was taking him to meetings on a sort of a regular basis, and they were doing all right, and I lost that commitment because they got hold of a jug of wine and burned his place down, you know, so that was the end of that. But anyway. You know, I used to go to meetings, but I didn't get anything out of it. I was just in my training, you know. And you know, I heard when I was new that things that had not happened to you when you were out there, go back out and they probably will. And that's what happened to me. I went through some bad things. I had a wife murdered, my brother was murdered, and I did 5 to 15 years since the state penitentiary. That's what happened to me in a short period of time. And I didn't do that much time at one stretch, but I did enough to know that I didn't want that type of life anymore. And you know, an amazing thing happened. I think that I feel that I was directed to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I think God directed me to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And and then I've had Dorothy and me just celebrated 55 years of marriage, and we've enjoyed most of it, and probably most of it was that we've been married that long was her doings. Yeah, it wasn't, you know, that's a fact. You know, she's and the reason she's the person she is because she's a believer in God, you know. And she's been that way ever since we were married. And before, I think she started a Bible study when she's like 14 years old or something. And she's at least 50 now. So you know, life is good. You know, like... I didn't used to. Isn't this a beautiful menu right here with the venue with the layout we have here? Yeah. Isn't this weather nice? And I wonder who's supplying that, you know? So, you know, we know who's supplying it. He's talking about it too right there. So anyway, it was good seeing Les again. I haven't seen Les for a long time. I spoke here a couple of years ago, and it was I think it was in the winter time. It goes all year round, don't it, Les? Yeah. And it was kind of nippy, but it was still nice. And there's always been there's quite a good crowd here tonight. I'm glad to see that AA surviving, you know. And you know, I've heard the expression that the door swings both ways in AA. Not always. Sometimes if you get in here, place, I mean. And what I found out for me, drinking has very little to do with my program. It got me in AA. It's what I do after I get into AA. And I personally believe that I think a step study is absolutely necessary was for me, and when I first started in AA, when I got sober in AA, and it's just as important today as it was then. And so I attend a step study meeting on a regular basis, and I have been, like I said, ever since I've been sober. And that's where the meat is in the program, as far as I'm concerned. You know, it's not the the camaraderie ship is good. I got sober at the Men's Stag on 1022 West 2nd Street, Pomona. And John Keefe, I started getting ready for the meeting. It didn't take me that long today to get ready for this meeting, but it took me a long time to get ready for that meeting, my first meeting. A guy came by and he said, he told my wife, he said, "I'm gonna come by tonight, pick Ronnie up, take him meeting." She said, "He won't go." I was back there at Wally's house in a little apartment behind us, and we were smoking a little non-habit forming weed and drinking some adult beverages. And by the time that close to 8 o'clock rolled around that night, I was slightly over ready for the meeting, if you know what I mean. So I went to that meeting at Men's Stag and on 2nd Street, and they asked for newcomers, and I didn't raise my hand as a newcomer. That false pride. But mind you now, I weighed 125 pounds with vomiting green bile and blood and could not stop drinking, you know. And so I was hooked. And so I went to that meeting and they asked for newcomers. And the guy that wound up being my sponsor, he was leading the meeting. He was smoking a cigar about this long, you know. And I thought, this guy must be one of the presidents or vice presidents of this meeting. I said, "I'm going to get close to him and find out what's happening, because he would probably understand a little bit better, you know." And so he wound up being my sponsor. But the John Keefe and Carmen were sitting behind me against the wall, and I was sitting at the table right in front of them. And John told Carmen, he said, "Don't light a match within 15 feet of this guy. He said his breath might ignite and blow the roof off this building." I was a little sensitive when I first got here, you know, and got my feelings hurt easily. But anyway, that was my introduction. And so after the meeting was in progress about, I don't know, maybe 15 minutes, guys were raising their hands and back and said, "My name is Jim and I'm an alcoholic." And I go, "I can't believe he's making a public admission in front of all these people." You know, between 80 and 100 guys at that meeting, it was a Men's Stag. Then another guy raised his hand and said, "My name is Charlie and I'm an alcoholic." And then I thought, you know, I'm not going there. And so as the meeting progressed on that evening, my hand popped up and it was like in an involuntary movement. And I said, "I came to this meeting for someone else." I said, "But in order to help that other person, I have to help myself first." I said, "My name is Ron and I'm an alcoholic." I don't know where in the hell that came from, but it popped out. And I've been sober ever since. And then I went home and tried to explain the big book to Dorothy, because I knew quite a bit about it for my first meeting, you know. And so she said, "You don't need to explain that to me. I lived it while you were doing your thing." So anyway, we've been married, and I have some very good friends in Alcoholics Anonymous, and a lot of you I know, and I met Les, and I just love that man. He's a good man. And then Hank used to attend bar part time where I used to drink, and when I'd walk in there, Hank would say, "Hey Ron, come here a minute," and he would check my gun in. I always carried a gun, and it was a big gun. I just wonder, it weighed as much as I did, just about. So anyway, the thing is, the police used to raid that place. I don't know why they did that. It was a nice neighborhood bar. So anyway, Hank was a good guy, even to me, when he was drinking, but he wasn't a sloppy drunk like me either. But he said, I came in one time, and he said, I did about a five dare. He said, my eyes looked like two cherries in a snowbank, you know. But anyway, Hank would check my gun in, because when the police raided the place, he didn't want to have the police get me with a gun. So he would check it in, and he would give it to me before I leave. So that's how I met Hank. Well, I you know, that's been over 50 years ago. And Hank and me have been friends ever since. And and then I met a lot of good friends here, a lot of people from Steve and Val and Pat and Bob Horak and his lovely wife and Dave and a few other people that I can't mention right now, that I can't spot right now, but a lot of good friends, a lot of people that Daniel, yeah, he was, I remember when he was brand new, he used to come to the Triangle Club, and that's basically where I used to go to a lot of meetings. But anyway, this is a good meeting. I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad we have such a good following here tonight. And that's about enough time that I've spent here. So what do we do, call up on our main speaker now? Do I do that? Okay, I would like to call Larry. Where is Larry? There he is.
Good evening. My name's Larry. I'm an alcoholic. And man, I'm grateful to be here tonight. And Les, thank you so much. You know, this is the first time I've met Les, but I know him. You know, I know Bob Bros. He sponsors Bob Bro. And Bob's talked a lot about him. We were talking tonight. We know each other through each other, right? I mean, we talk to each other, and we hear names, and we hear about each other. And by the time we meet somebody, we know them. We know who they are, and we know why they're here. And there's two guys right there that I really love also, Hank and Ron. Two special guys, and AA. Ron's my sponsor. And Les sent me a text and said, hey, the leader's got to have at least 1 year sobriety. I said, hey, Ron, he says, I've got 46 of those. And so he was definitely qualified to be the leader tonight. And but anyway, Ron's my sponsor. I got sober January 9th of 1991, and I was married to my wife, Debbie, and Ronnie said he's been married 55 years, and Debbie and me have been married 54 years. July 5th was our 54th anniversary. Yeah, that's crazy, huh? Pat, you're amazing. I mean, you know, last time I heard somebody say that, opening like that, and do that, was a guy that came out of prison after 37 years. And that guy knew that, memorized, stood up and came to a meeting in San Diego and just rattled that off. That's the only person I've ever heard do that. But you did a lot better, a lot better. And so you haven't been to prison. But anyway, you know, I'm grateful to be here tonight. January 9th, 1991, Debbie and me, we were married in 69. 1969, we have three children. We have a girl that's 50, and she's married, has three children, so we have three grandchildren from Brandy and Jeff, and then our son, Brandon and Candace, he's 48, and we've got three grandchildren from them. And then Kristen, our daughter, and she's married to Jamie. And we have one little boy from that marriage. And I mean, we are so grateful. We have a relationship with... We have a relationship with all of our children and all of our grandchildren. And that's only through this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, it's crazy how that all works. But anyway, I grew up in places... my parents moved a few times. And so I lived in Chino. And then from Chino, we moved to Tehachapi. And then from Tehachapi, we moved to Soledad. And there's probably somebody in this crowd that's saying, whoa, I recognize those names. And I actually, Debbie and me actually lived at Folsom. But so anyway, those are prison names. And my dad worked in the California Department of Corrections. And so we moved several times. And I remember living in that home. My parents, I mean, my parents were good parents. They tried their best. And I know that today. I didn't know that when I got sober. I didn't know that before I got sober. But they did the best with what they had. And now today, I really understand that. But my mom was volatile. She was extremely volatile. And she would just, I mean, blow up and things would get really bad. And the next day, it was over. You didn't talk about it. It was never discussed. And it was over. And even sometimes I'd get a gift. I'd get a little gift, maybe a toy or something, to make up for whatever was said and whatever was done. And so that's kind of growing up in my family. And so I remember being in Soledad, and I love Soledad. It was a farm community. For a guy like me, I mean, I was a little kid. My friends were farm boys, and I could go out there, and we could drive Jeeps at 10 years old, driving Jeeps around the farm, and they'd give us a shotgun, and they'd say, you know, go shoot those crows, get them out of the fields. And we'd lay in those fields, and we'd pop carrots out of the field and wash them in the irrigation, and we'd lay there, and the crop dusters would go over our heads, and all them little specks would land on us, and we'd just eat that carrot, and it was like heaven. I mean, that was like being in heaven. And falling out? Anyway, you know, can you hear me? Okay, I'll do my best. But anyway, so I'm going to be a freshman in high school, and I hear my parents talking, and they're saying in the kitchen, they're saying, we're going to move to Chino. And I was going to be the freshman class president at Gonzales High School. And this is Soledad, Gonzales, and Shular all came together, this high school. This was it was like my dream. And they're moving me to Chino. And Chino's like L.A. I mean, to me, in those days, Chino's a farm community. And this is 1962. But man, I thought, you know, this is terrible. And I was mad, and I was angry, and I wasn't going to go. And we come down to Chino. And I remember I didn't know anybody. And you're trying to fit in. And all these kids had grown up together, and I hadn't grown up with them. So I remember going to a dance, and it was the surfers, and the Beach Boys were playing all that stuff. And I just remember that I could not ask a girl to dance. And I just was a wallflower. And then some guys said to me the next time we had a dance, they said, hey, would you want to go drink? And I said, yeah, I'll go drink. So we go out to the Olive Groves in Chino, and I got six of those country club stout malt liquors, short cans. They were short. And man, I started popping those things and putting them down. And those guys go, hey, easy, easy. I said, you know, that stuff's powerful. And you know, I said, oh, that's not going to do anything. They're too small. And I drank all those. And I know I went into blackout, and I know I came out of a blackout, and I know I danced, and I know I laughed, I had fun, and I knew that I got married that night. I was married to alcohol. Never in my life would I be without alcohol. I woke up with a garter around my neck. People were telling me I was crazy. You were so funny, and I did everything I wanted to do. I was a guy that when somebody said, you're short, it would just petrify me. You're short, you're little, you're cute. And I didn't want to be short, little, and cute. I want to be tall, handsome. And that kind of stuff petrified me. But you put alcohol in me, and man, I got tall, I got handsome, and man, I could move. And it was just everything I ever dreamt about. And so with that, I'm not doing good with this microphone. So anyway, here we go. I'm going to get closer to the mic. So anyway, this worked for me. And so my junior year in high school, Debbie and me hooked up. And thanks. Thank you. Yeah. So anyway, Debbie and me started dating junior year in high school. And that lady, I knew that lady was the lady for me. I mean, she was a nice lady, really just a good girl, and everything about her was everything I dreamt about that I wanted for a girlfriend. And I thought, this girl, she was my age. And in those days, same age never dated, right? Older guy, younger girl, it was all done that way. And she was my age, and her girlfriend came up, and I still never had courage to ask any. her girlfriend came up and says, hey, Debbie would like to go out with you. I said, yeah, set it up. And she sets up a date for me to take Debbie out. And from that day forward, man, I've been with that girl. One time she broke up with me. And that's a long story. But I've never forgotten it. But I love that girl. And I love her. I mean, she's been somebody that's been a stability of our family. So the result of that is in 1969, we got married. And Debbie had saved up. I was in school. I was going to Laverne College, and I had 1 year left. Debbie had saved up a bunch of money, and she said, hey, we can get married, and you can finish college. I said, that's cool. You know, that's really nice. And so we got married. She paid for the rest of my college. I finished college, and I said I would never go to work in a California prison. Never. I grew up in them. I was not a big guy. I wasn't a tough guy. I lifted weights to try to act like I was bigger than I was, and I was scared. So where do you think I went to work? California State Prison at Chino. Oh. Yes, sir. And I showed up, and I started doing that job, and I did not like being told what to do. That was one of my problems, and so I end up in a tower, and I'm looking at a tower all night long, one way, the next way, and I come home one morning, and this, I'm irritable, I'm discontented, and that's the alcoholism, and I'm drinking a lot. I drink that Carlo Rossi when I get home in the morning because I've got to sleep. See, I'm not drinking because I need alcohol. I'm drinking because I got to sleep. And so I get this jug of Carlo Rossi, and I watch the news, and I see a plane flying to Europe, and I call Debbie up. I said, you want to go to Europe? She goes, what do you mean? I said, quit your job. And she says, will you really quit your job? I says, I'm going right now. And this is in 1972. I quit my job. She quit her job. And the next thing you know, we were in Europe. We had no plans, didn't know where we were going. And for three months, we traveled Europe. Thumbing it. I mean, this girl had never been out of Chino. And she's in Europe. And we're going everywhere. We're in Greece. We're in Spain. We're all over Europe. And I came back. We came back and she was pregnant, and we were broke. Pregnant, broke, and moved in with my parents. And you know how that went, because they thought I was a nut anyway to do this, because this was money we could buy a home and we could be secure and we could do all the things that stable people do. And we didn't do that. We did everything wrong, and so we were going to be punished verbally by my mom every night. And I'm working out, I'm welding on, my dad had a dune buggy, and I'm welding on this dune buggy out in the garage, and this captain, it's on the prison grounds at Chino, and this captain comes by every day at lunch. You want to come back? Want to come back? Nope, I'm not going to come back to the prison. And finally, the pressure and all that stuff, I'm back at the prison, and I'm working at the prison. And the funny thing about that, you know, I was good at what I did. And I was good at managing people, but I didn't believe it, and I didn't know it, and I was a misfit, and I was scared. People walk up to me now and they go, "You worked in a prison?" I worked in a prison for 32 years, California Department of Corrections. I worked in several prisons. I opened prisons, Tehachapi, San Diego, and people go, "Weren't you scared?" Heck yeah, scared. I mean, of course I was scared. But that was good. That wasn't a bad scare. You know, God gave us the gift of fear for good reasons, and sometimes we use that gift of fear for bad reasons. But anyway, the bottom line is this marriage, we had those three children. We bought a home, we started this marriage, and you know what happens with the alcoholic. I mean, I'm drinking every day. I'm drinking at midnight when we get off. I'm going to the bars. I'm drinking. I'm drinking, and things are getting worse. And so I lost this job at Norco. They were downsizing, and I got mad, and I got angry. And I don't know if you know that rage the alcoholics go through and that anger that they go through and how hateful you can get. And this administration loved me, and I hated them. And I said, I'm out of here. And I got an offer to go to Tehachapi to open up that new prison. And I told Debbie, I says, hey, we'll take the family up there. We'll have horses. We'll have horses. We'll have a farm. This is going to be fun. And we went up there, and you know it was. Tehachapi was like a new life, a new break for us. But the only problem is Larry showed up. And when Larry showed up, you know what happens. everything gets torn apart. And Tehachapi was too small. This is 1984. Tehachapi was a place that they didn't have any major stores, all country stores, country market. And these guys are thinking, I'm throwing a party every night. I mean, I'm buying so much alcohol. What the heck is going on with this guy? People are asking me, you know, what's going on? And they're following me. And then this boss I had, John Rattel, I tell you, this guy was tough. He was a real tough guy in a prison. And that guy managed me like on top of me all the time. Now, I'm a captain opening this prison, and he's a deputy warden. And this guy's just on me all the time, sending me memos and telling me do this, do that. And I said, I got to get out of this place. And so we were there 2 years, and I faked it like, you know, my kids want to go to San Diego. And I had this opportunity to go to San Diego because I'd opened up a new prison. No other captain in the state had opened up a prison, because that was the first new prison that came online. So I get to go down to San Diego. I get that job, and I'm running. See, what I'm really doing is running. I'm running from John Rattel, who's on my ass. And I said, I'm getting out of here, and I'll make it look good. And I was always good at making things look good, looking the way I wanted them to be. I was a manipulator, and I was good at it. And I get down to San Diego. We're going to open this prison. They're starting the activation of it. And they said, hey, we're fired. They fired the guy that was going to be the warden. And I go, you're kidding. And we come to work, and this guy's gone. And I, well, who's going to be the warden? You guys know who's going to be the warden, right? Yeah, John Rattel. John Rattel shows up, and here's where my head's at. I go in to see John Rattel, and I tell her, we're out of here. We're gone. And I'm going to go see him tomorrow. And I go into his office, and I sit down, and I says, hey, Mr. Rattel, you didn't hire me. And I know, you know, you get to hire who you want. And I says, I'll leave. I'll find a job. And this guy cursed a lot. And this guy looked at me, and he says, what the F are you talking about? He says, when we open this prison, I'm going to promote you to associate warden. He says, now get the F out of my office. And I go out of that office, and you know what my head did? No, he won't. No, he won't. I got out of that office, and I said, he won't do that. That ain't going to happen. And I went home, and I told her, this is what he said. And she said, maybe he likes you. And no, he's tricking me. He's tricking me. And that's where my head was all the time. I'm always somebody's trying to get me, and I can't appreciate who I am. You know, that I really did have talent that I didn't know I had. I didn't believe I had. And so anyway, the bottom line is we activated that prison. It was a success. It was a real success. But my stock was falling. It was falling because I was drinking. Even guys on the job, they try to protect me. And I say, hey, Larry, you know, you maybe had a beer too late last night. You know, the lieutenant would give me a piece of gum and chew the gum, maybe. And they were always trying to protect me, but I was just going down. This marriage was falling apart, and I'd go home every night angry and mad and blowing up. And this particular night, this is the big night, January 8th, 1991. I got sober January 9th, 1991. But January 8th of 1991, I came home. And this guy here, if you really knew me, you would not like me. You may love me today, but you wouldn't like me. I came home, and I'm building a for sale sign, for sale by owner. And I took this 2-inch polished tubing, and I shot it with lacquer. I had it braised. It was beautiful. And I did lettering on a sign, for sale by owner. Now, my family didn't know I was selling the house, but that's what was happening. And on that night, I got really pissed off. And you know what? It was probably, maybe the dishes weren't done, you know? Something really big. And I flipped out. I went outside and I pounded that for sale sign in the front yard. And on that night, January 8th of 1991 at 9 p.m., our house went up for sale. And nobody knew it. And my kids, I come in and two of the kids are crying. They're crying on the steps. And the reason they were crying is because our daughter was out on a date. And she was going to come home. Our oldest, Brandy, who's 50 now, she was 18 years old. She's going to come home and she's going to see this sign. And the guy's going to say, hey, are you selling your house? And she would say, I don't know. That's the kind of crazy that was going on in this household. And that was the night that that was the night, because I went upstairs and she came upstairs, and there was something in my mind that always told me if I ever lost her, I lost the only sanity left in my life. The only piece of sanity, because everything was insane. I'm going to that prison and I'm blowing up on people, and I'm a mess. And that night she comes up those stairs and she looks at me and she says, "It's over. It's over." And I looked at her, and I always manipulated her. I always got her to take the blame for whatever I was doing. She would say, "Hey, I'm," you know, I would turn her around and get her to apologize to me for my bad behavior. And that was the game I played. And that night, the game was over. I looked at a woman that had loved me from high school, a woman who was my high school sweetheart, a woman that I said, if I ever get that woman to be my wife, I'll never lose that woman. And alcoholism stole that woman from me. Took her away, and she looked at me and she says, "I don't have an ounce of love for you." This is a woman who was madly in love with me. I looked at her in the eyes, and all I saw was depth. I just saw darkness and depth. There was nothing in her eyes. I mean, nothing. I looked at her and I said, it was just dead. And that was that night I knew the game was over. The game had ended for this guy. And I said, but see, I still, that one last hoorah of the alcoholic, you know, that, you know, she says, "I'm done, it's over, I don't have an ounce of love for you, and I'm leaving." And I says, "You won't get the house." And she says, "I don't want the house." I said, "Well, you won't get the TV." And she says, "I don't want the TV." I says, "This old beat up couch, you're not gonna get the couch." And she says, "I don't want anything you have." And man, I'll tell you, that was the benchmark right there. You know, I'd been to a therapist a few years earlier. The guy fired me. Has any of you been fired by a therapist? If you go to a therapist drunk and angry and rage, they'll fire you. I got fired. The guy told me, "We're done." I'm there, I'm happy, I'm ready for our next session, and he says, "We're done." And I said, "I never heard of such a thing." And he goes, "You're an alcoholic." He says, I don't deal with alcoholism." He says, "You need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous." That's the only seed that got planted in his head. And that next morning I got up, and I opened up those white pages, and I called Alcoholics. It was there, Alcoholics Anonymous, in black letters, and a phone number, and somebody answered the phone. And they said, you know, what they tell, I mean, it's like we hit the lotto, right? "Oh, you're lucky. There's a meeting right by you tonight." And you know, I go, "Oh, I didn't mean tonight. I mean, I'm thinking about it. I'm seriously considering it." But anyway, I went to that meeting. Catholic Church, everybody knows, right? It's at the Catholic Church at 7 p.m., right? And so I show up, and all of you were like this in front of that door, and you scared the crap out of me. I said, "I can't walk through you people. I can work in a prison, but I can't walk through you people. I mean, no way." And I hid behind the car, and this lady, and she seemed old, and she had bright red hair, and she was little, and she grabs my arm and she says, "Sonny, come with me, you're in the right place." And she walked me. Now, we've heard of Eskimos, right, in AA? This lady walked me. Now, I don't like people calling me Sonny. And I looked at her, and I don't know why. She walked me into that meeting like a little boy. And she sat me down in a corner, and I sat there like a little boy. And I didn't raise my hand. I didn't know nothing about you people, what you're doing, and what tricks you're trying to play. But all I know is that some lady took a cake, and it was a carrot cake. And then this girl gave me a grapevine and said, "Go home and read this." And I locked myself in the bathroom, and I read the grapevine, and I said, I'm just an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic. I knew it. I'm an alcoholic. And I came out of there, and the next meeting I went to the next night, and then she said there was another two meetings back to back the next night, and I started going to AA. And I didn't know what you guys, all I know, the same lady took a cake every meeting for 1 year, and it was a carrot cake. And I thought, you know, something's up with carrot cakes. There must be something in that soaks up alcohol or something. But anyway, this woman stuck around. She didn't leave. She stuck around because she said something weird is going on. I don't know what's happening to this guy, but I kept going to those meetings. And then this lady, Margita, she showed me a picture of Bill Wilson. Her and Bill Wilson, I don't even know Bill Wilson. And she says, Letty, she's Austrian. Letty. She says, you need a sponsor. Sandy shows an interest in you. Ask Sandy to be your sponsor. And Sandy had 1 year sobriety. And I went up to Sandy, and you guys, now I knew your rules. You guys had no rules, see? You guys told me that. There are no rules in AA, right? Suggestions. It's just suggestions. And so I asked Sandy to be my sponsor. And he says, oh, yeah, that'd be great. And so he says, yeah, you're going to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. You're going to call me every day. He says, you're going to go one meeting a week with me. We're going to go to one retreat a year together. And, I mean, that's like, you know, I went in that meeting and I couldn't hear anything. And I just was enraged. And Sandy came up afterwards and he says, man, this is going to be great. And I said, no, it's not. I said, it's over. It's over. Within one meeting, Sandy and me parted ways. And I know he, but Sandy wouldn't let me go. See, Sandy saw me as his lifeline, and he would not let me go. And Sandy would call me, and I had that gray, remember those gray answer machines, the first ones they came out with, big cassette? And it's the first time you could hear somebody talk, right? And Sandy would call, and he'd say, Larry. And this friggin' guy pissed me off. Everything he said to me, dude, Larry. Pick up the phone. I know you're there. And I just, but I would not pick up the phone. And then he would say, I'm going to be there at 7 p.m., pick you up for a meeting, and see you at 7. And I would just hide. And 7 o'clock, tick, 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 she would open the door and let him in my house. And this scout's honor, I would get in his car, mad. I don't know, how does God work? How does he work, huh? See, I was this little guy that was always mad, always enraged, always, nobody treated me right. And why would I get in his car and go to a meeting with this guy? And Sandy was on fire for AA. So Sandy took me to LA, to the Pacific Group, introduced me to the Pacific Group. He took me to Joe and Charlie. They were doing this one-day seminar in San Diego. That's where I got sober, was San Diego. And he took me to that one-day seminar with Joe and Charlie. We went to a retreat with Father Bill Wilson in Mission San Luis Rey. And Father Bill Wilson, all these people like this, and he's talking. And you know how it is when that speaker talks to you. He talks to you, and he pointed, and he says, it's okay to be right. He was Irish. But he says, it's not okay to be viciously right. And man, he nailed me, you know, because that, I could never just be right. You know, I always had to get vicious and I always had to pound somebody and, you know, you, let them know I'm right. And man, I started learning so many things that you people started teaching me. And Sandy was just engulfing me into AA. And 6 months sober, my stock goes up in the prison business. Something's going on with this guy that people are noticing. And I get an offer to go to Chino as a deputy warden for this guy that I didn't even know. He calls me up and wants me to come to Chino as a deputy warden. And I'm in San Diego, and I talk with Debbie, and we talk it over, and we can do that, and that would be good. And Sandy got a job. Sandy was very smart, and he became a vice president of a company that went to San Antonio, Texas. So I would call Sandy and I'd say, how you doing? He says, I'm not going to AA. I said, why? And he says, they don't like Californians in Texas and they don't clap. They don't, you know, they're different. And he says, what about you and Chino? Because I moved up to Chino for that job. And I says, well, I don't like Chino either, you know. In San Diego, it's a love fest. you have a birthday and the sponsor gets up and says, what a wonderful guy you are. And they hug and you know, and there's love, love, love. And I come up to Chino. It's like, hey, get your cake, get your Coke, sit down. We got the next birthday. And, you know, I was ready for the love. And I told Sandy, it's different. It's different. I had to meet the Chino people. And they didn't want to hear what it was like in San Diego. They wanted to hear, what are you doing in Chino? What are you doing with the Chino? And I hooked up with that Wet Brain Express down there in Chino. You know, the John, you know, John Kay and all those guys. I mean, I just, man, I melted with those guys. They were just great guys. So I fell in love with Chino. And Sandy would call me, and then he started calling me drunk. And Sandy continued on. He came back to California, had a beautiful home in Irvine Ranch, but he couldn't get back into AA. There was big guys down there in Irvine and big sobriety down there. And he ended up with Cliff Roach as his sponsor down in San Diego. But he just couldn't stay sober. And Sandy died from alcoholism, died from it. The guy that saved my life died from alcohol. But anyway, so my story goes on so let's see now. We're in Chino, and I got lost all of a sudden talking about that. But anyway, the 5 years sober, you know, I mean, sobriety was really, I was doing really good in sobriety, and I was really, I was kind of doing all of everything I was supposed to do right? I went to Friday Night Pioneer speaker meeting. My sponsor was John V. We sat together, John and Bev, Debbie and me, and Roy and Marie McCauley, and we'd all be together. And I was doing everything right. And I was a secretary, I was a treasurer, I was this, I was that. Going to the convention down there in 1995, the big international convention. And I was AA. I was AA all the way. But I hadn't really had a God in my life. And I hadn't really, I was doing the surface. And I looked good, but at home, we were dying. At 5 years sober, Debbie says, I'm walking, I'm leaving. And she had her little bags, and she's going out the door. And I thought, I'm better than I've ever been in my life. And how could this be? And she looked at me and she says, you know what, Larry? And women seem to connect with this more than men. And she said, you know what, Larry, I fell back in love with you. She says, before you hurt me all the time, you'd say things that would be hurtful, and you would hurt me all the time. But she says, I had a wall up, you couldn't hurt me, anything you said. But when you got sober and things started to change, I fell back in love with you. And she says, when you talk like that to me, she says, you hurt me worse today than when you used to do it all the time. And I only did it like, you know, maybe once a month, I'd lose it and blow up. And I thought, that's pretty fair. And she told me she hooked up with these Al-Anoners. You Sparks, you feel them. Yeah, I feel them too. And they're here. They're like in the, you know, they're like, they're here. And that woman, I mean, she gained so much strength that I never thought she had. And she left. That time she left. And you know, I took her to dinner. And I sat down with her at dinner and I said, what do you want from me? And she looked me dead in the eyes and she said, I want unconditional love. And I looked at her and I said, there's no such thing. And I believed that. And I was wrong. I was wrong. She just wanted to be loved the way she was. She didn't want me to try to change her, try to control her, try to move her into my position, try to, you know, and every so often I try to take it back. And so we've had to really grow together, because also sobriety also brings me being more mindful and being better with the family, better with the grandkids. They're loving me. They think I'm great. And I've got to respect the fact that she had a lot of territory that now I'm stepping on. And the way I look at it is, you know, I learned how to, I danced with her a certain way and it was terrible. It was a lot of anger, a lot of rage and that kind of stuff. Well, when that stopped, we started dancing a different dance. You know, I started asking about the kids, checking on the money. She had full control of the money. Well, what about the money? Well, now, you know, I'm touching their territory that she wasn't familiar with me being on it. And so I had to really work at how are we going to dance now, this new dance? And so anyway, I went to my sponsor and I said, she's leaving. She's gone. What am I going to do? And, you know, I don't know where these guys get all these wise things. But, you know, guys, you know that none of us come up with ourselves, right? We don't have that kind of stuff. We heard it. We saw it. We saw somebody walk through it. We've seen people do this. And this guy told me, Larry, you need to do something for your wife for the rest of your life. Something that she would want. Something that is just for her. That she knows you're doing this just for her. And he said, that's probably going to be hard to figure that one out. I said, no, it's not. I said, it's church. He says, oh. He goes, that's easy. I said, no. I don't go to church. And he looked at me and he said, always your way, huh, Larry? Always your way. And that's this little guy. You know, I want her so bad, but hey, I really want to control it. I really want, you know, why can't I do something like that? Well, the way God works in my life, and I didn't really understand it, and I see him today now, how he just continually threads himself through my life. I mean, when you were talking, when you said those but, God could and would, right? Could and would. Why would it say that? God could and would. And this couple that lived next door to us, see, I was really a pretty rotten guy. He would not like me. And this couple was a Christian couple. They lived next door to us for many years, but we didn't live by them now. And this couple treated me good all the time. I had no idea this couple, she had taken my guns over and given them to this woman. She was fearful and fearful of what I might do. And, you know, because it was bad. And this woman had my guns, knew what was going on in her home. And this woman and her husband never approached me like, what the heck's wrong with you? Never said anything to me. All they did was treat me good. And their daughter, we hadn't seen them in years. And because this is when we used to live in Upland. And their daughter got married, and out of nowhere, we hadn't seen this girl in years. And out of nowhere, we're invited to this wedding. Now, I'm not going to go to church. I'm not doing none of that stuff. And they invite us, and there's this pastor, John Werhaus, a pastor from Yorland Friends Church. And this guy does a wedding, and he cries. He cries, and he means it. I mean, I know this guy's telling, he means what he's saying, and his heart's really in it. And you know what guys like me are. I go to, could you want to go to his church? Now, he's over the hill, and I'm living on the prison grounds of Chino. He's in Yorba Linda. And would you want to go to his church? And she said, that'd be fine. I don't care. And we started going to that guy's church. And you know what the first church service I went to? It was on tithing. You know what tithing does to an alcoholic? It's peeling that $1 out of your pocket. It's like, I'll fake it this time and put it in the other pocket. And, you know, no. Tithing, that's the first sermon? No, man. And so, plus I sat in the front row because they don't sit in the front row. So Debbie and me were all by ourselves in the front row. And she didn't care. She said, I don't care, whatever. And this faith walk grew. And it grew and it grew. And there's a lady that came sit next to us and her husband and children and from Colorado. They just moved to Chino Hills. And I said, what are you doing over at this church? And they sat in my space in the front row. And Debbie, they go, where do you live? And Debbie tells her, we live on the prison grounds. She says, is that the guy? Because my name was on the front sign at the prison. It says, California Institution for Men, warden, and my name. And I since then I've made warden. And it's on the front sign. And she says, you know that I come to that street. I pull up to that street every day with my children. And I pray for him. Every day. How does that happen? I mean, was that just, what? I'm still standoffish. And I'm so standoffish that this lady gives me a card. And she says, I'm worried about you. She says, I'm fearful that you have a hardened heart. And I didn't know what a hardened heart was. Because everything was no. Want to go to a Sunday school? No. Just leave me alone. And And she gave me that card, and you know what it reminded me of? It was a young girl when I got sober in Chino. When I came up to Chino, 6 months sober, her name was Carol. And she had been sober since she was like 13 years old. And Carol had the big book, and she held it in front of me, and she said, "You know what that is?" And I said, "No." I said, "It's a big book." She said, "No." She says, "That's the Bible for the hardened heart." And I didn't know what that meant. I had no idea what that meant. But all this stuff's lining up. It's all lining up. How God's working on my heart, trying to soften my heart to where I can learn how to love a woman that I wanted to love, but I didn't know how to love. I'd come home every night. I didn't know how to love her. And you guys told me, we're going to love you until you can love yourself. And once you love yourself and you bring God into your life, you're going to be learning how to love another person. Because love isn't sex. And that's all I thought it was. And it's not that at all. It's patience, right? Kindness, forgiveness. It's slow to anger. It's caring. I didn't know that. I didn't have any idea what that was. But anyway, this marriage has grown and grown and grown. And you know, I always say, if Debbie was here, I could tell you, she would raise her hand and say that she loves me. She would say that. Yeah. 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 Ooh, that was close. But I didn't talk to her beforehand. Tell her the punishment that would come. But you know, this marriage has grown, and we've got 7 grandkids. And you know, our kids, we've had a lot of conflicts with our kids. A lot of things have happened with our kids, and things that have hurt our feelings deep, and things that we didn't deserve. And you know, one time I remember coming out of San Rafael, and I was going to turn that car around and go back. My son and his wife lived in San Rafael, and I was going to kick their ass. I was done. I'd had enough. And I turned that car around, and she says, "No, Larry, don't do that. We've come too far." See, my kids were older when I got sober. I've got a lifetime of you know, making amends to these kids. Why would I expect my kids to be different, right? They grew up in alcoholism. I mean, my gosh. And can I love them? Can I forgive them? Can I not pit them against each other? We learned that, and we stuck by it, and I'm grateful for it. We don't talk about our kids to each of the kids. We don't do that. And they know that. Today they know it. They don't even try it. Because they know we love each one of you the same. Each one of you. And our grandkids, we've won a lot of these children over with our grandkids. Because the grandkids love us to death and who we are today. And when we get cards, I used to get a card from Brandy for Father's Day. Some kids would not give me a card. But when I did get a card, it would just say, "Happy Father's Day, Brandy. And happy Father's Day, have a good day, Brandy." And those cards kept, you know what the last card said? "I am so grateful for your faith and your recovery and the courage." Now, I don't, you know, courage. God's given me the courage. I'm not a courageous guy. But the courage to change. That's my last Father's Day card. The faith, your recovery program, and courage. And if when my day comes and I'm laying parallel, if there's anything I want those kids and grandkids to know, is that, you know, you people saved my life, brought me into a relationship with a God that I had no understanding of, changed me from the inside out, a guy that was totally lost and angry. And the only way I could deal with fear was anger. I mean, every time I got scared. Now, seeds get planted. When I got sober, my son was really down, and I don't know where I'm at time was. Am I about that time? Yeah, I don't know. I got sober. 6 months I'm up in Chino. I'm driving back and forth. Brandon, our son, he's in high school. He's a senior. He's going to graduate, and he got kicked out of school. And they have a rule that if you get caught with alcohol in the parking lot at a dance, you're done. You're finished. It doesn't matter what kind of a kid you were. You're finished. So he was done, and Debbie and me had to take him to another high school and check him in. Now, this is a kid that was an honor rolls kid. He was an athlete. He was a peer counselor. He was a Christian athlete. He was everything I wasn't. and he's booted out of school. And we're taking him, and I looked at him, and it's the first time. Now, this guy's 17 years old. It's the first time I looked at my son like a father and talked to him like a father-son relationship. It was always, you know, I was always never there. And I looked at him, and I said, would you want me to do something for you and see if I could, you know, appeal this or do something? And he cried, and he says, would you please, Dad? And then, so I started the journey. See, and I understand the chain of command. I know the chain of command. I know discipline, right? I worked in a prison for a long time. I understand discipline, and I understand how you punishment. You dish out punishment accordingly, right? You don't kill everybody. We can't hang everybody, right? So I went up the chain of command, and they were abusive, talking to me like, oh, you're one of those fathers that can't accept your son's a problem. And I sat there and I took all that, because I know how to do that. I listened and I said, I just want you to know I'm going to go to the next level. Went up to the assistant superintendent of schools, and the same thing. Then I got to the school board. Debbie and me and my son went before the school board, our son. And this school board had never overturned this rule, never. And I asked the assistant principal that was disciplined, I said, were there other kids in that parking lot? He said, yes. How many? 40. Did you interview them? He says, yes. Did any of them admit to alcohol? No. Only one, your son. Your son's the only one that admitted to alcohol. I said, do you believe any of those kids drank or had alcohol in their possession that night? And he says, absolutely. I said, so what we're telling them is, man, the good message, lie. Don't you ever tell the truth. Lie. Because if you tell the truth, you're going to end up like Brandon. So lie. I said, is that the message we want to send? And that school board took 3 hours, sat us outside for 3 hours, and they came out. And they said, Mr. and Mrs. Wietek, take your son back to Rancho Bernardo High School. He's going to graduate with his class. That didn't make up for all those years of alcoholism. But what we were talking about today is a seed got planted in my son. Now, my son has a lot of resentments towards me and a lot of resentments towards all this growing up and that alcoholism. And it's been a long time. But you know what? It's so that seed. God told me, you water that seed. Don't try to kill that seed with your venom and with your words and your poison. Love that seed to death, and it's going to grow. And man, I'm going to tell you something. Right now, my son just called me, and for the first time, I got to tell him a little bit about working in a prison. What it was like. I've never talked to him about that. What it was like managing the prison. Because the politics and things that are going on right now, and he kind of associates it. And we've struck up this conversation. We never had. We never had that kind of talk. And my daughters, I mean, they love me to death. And grandkids. See, I mess with my grandkids. And you guys understand that. I mean, I mess with them. I do not give them money. I always, you know, I'll always give Debbie money. And then I'll go, don't you give that money to them. And she'll, you know, and then she'll give it to them. And they're always saying, Grandpa, you're such a goof. But that's what I am. I'm a goof. You know, I'm a 75-year-old goof that you've given me a life that I never thought I could have. You've given me a wife that I can love I never thought I could love. You've given me grandchildren that I can treat with respect and honor, and my children. And even when they don't do it my way, they don't do everything my way at all. And I can love them the way they are. But this is it's an awesome program. It's crazy. I can't explain it. I can't explain how God came into my life. But I have a faith walk. And I mean, I have people in this church that I love. I love these people. And I love these people. And some of you people are those people. And I found out, dang, we're all just trying to live, right? We're all trying to just live a life today. And I'm grateful all of you are here today. And what a wonderful meal Fernando put together. And Les, what an honor to come to this meeting tonight. And I can't tell you how grateful I am to get to know you and to get to be here at this meeting. Thank you.
blessed alcoholic. Let's give Larry and Ron a hand for a great meeting. Fernando for cooking up the stuff, and everybody else that participates in this meeting. We could do this.